It is November 9th, 2021 at 5:08 p.m. and I will call to order the Pacific City Joint Water and Sanitary Authority Board of Directors business meeting. I'll call the roll. Ann Price.
Here.
Cameron Gogas.
Here.
Tom Donahue.
Here.
Don Carlton.
Here.
For the record, all directors are present. Item 3. Minutes of the October 12, 2021 business meeting. Are there any corrections or comments? I see none. Ann?
Hearing none, I'll move that we approve the minutes of the October 12, 2021 business meeting.
I'll second it.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the business meeting minutes of the October 12, 2001 meeting. All in favor, say aye.
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 Thank you. Motion passes unanimously. Item 4A, accounts payable for October 15th and October 31st. Are there any questions? Yes, Tom?
I have one, and this is probably for Rochelle. On October the 15th, this is on the third page, there's a $323 check for TMG Services, and it says it's for an LMI kit. What the heck is an LMI kit?
I'd love to tell you what an LMI kit is, but I'm not 100% sure on that one. I'm going to pass this to John.
Well, I think that LMI, I believe, is the manufacturer of one of our chemical feed pumps at Horn Creek, and I think it needed a rebuild, and that's what that kit is for.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you, Tom. Cameron?
I have that, Tom. We've got so on the credit card services, page 1, you've got monthly email, employee training, just COVID tests. What are the door hangers?
So when we have to do like a water, a planned water leak fix or some sort of replacement where people's water are going to be off, we usually make like a little note and we hang it on their door in a plastic baggie. And John had this grand idea that we would buy door hangers, those little things that like you would get at a hotel that say like do not disturb, and it sticks on the door, but they're paper and you just write in like the date and what street is going to be affected, and if you're receiving this then obviously you're going to be affected at such and such a time.
Okay.
They're very, very handy.
And then we've got two charges for Michelle's retirement.
What
did we do for her retirement?
There was a little barbecue shindig that we had for her retirement in September.
Okay. I didn't even know what happened.
I didn't either.
Oh, I sent invitations to everybody. I'm so sorry. Oh.
Okay.
That explains why you weren't there.
And then, of course, there were some three employee trainings.
Let me look at these. So the large ones, the 20250 and 20250, John went to a 3-day training happened actually at the end of the month, but you had to pay for it ahead of time. And I think there's another one in there, 4850 and 4850. That was for a book that we purchased that helps teach you and get you ready for water treatment classes or tests, water treatment tests.
So the one for John, that was for the smart park, took the elevator up.
Yes.
That was to get my needed CEUs, my water and wastewater licenses in Oregon expire at the end of the year, and that was to get my, that was a short school so I could get my CEUs so I could renew my license for another 2 years. Here it expires on December 31st, and now it's been extended for 2 years beyond that.
Okay. On page 3 of 5, right at the top, PC Homes, FEB doors.
Yeah, we had a couple of doors, well, the front and the back doors of the FEB that had rotted and needed replacing.
$4,000 worth?
Doors are very, very expensive.
And, well, then you got one from Rosenberg's for $301, same thing.
That was just a bolt slider plate because the hole for the deadbolt in the door was larger than our deadbolts, so we had to, I don't know, put like a backing on it so it wouldn't fall through.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Any other questions? I'll entertain a motion. Anne?
I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for October 15th and October 31st, 2021.
Second.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded that we approve the accounts payable for October 15th and October 31st of 2021. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Motion passes unanimously. Item 4B, fiscal year report. Any questions about the fiscal year report? All right. Hearing none, we'll move on to item 5, the manager's report. John?
Yes. We wanted to highlight a couple of items on the manager's report, but before I do, I wanted to recognize Leonard Whiteman. He recently successfully passed his wastewater treatment certification test. And this was no small feat. He actually increased his certification by 2 levels in a single test. He's gone from a wastewater treatment level 1 to a wastewater treatment level 3. And I know that this was a test that he worked hard to study for. And I just wanted to congratulate him for a job well done. And, you know, it's good. I'm always pleased to see people that are proactively going out there and keeping their knowledge current and, you know, doing what they can to increase their skill level, increase their certification level, which in turn obviously increases their value to the authority. And I just wanted to give him a shout out for a job well done with that.
Congratulations, Leonard.
Yeah, great job, Leonard.
Thank you. And a couple other things I wanted to highlight from the manager's report. We had just curved back some of our COVID precautions. Beginning with the week of October 17th, we suspended the employee screening program because the COVID positivity rates in Tillamook had decreased significantly. I think at one point they were up to 24-25%, and now the 14-day average is down to 5%. For similar reasons, we reopened the authority office on October 18th. However, I'm aware of some significant developments in the local PC area, Pacific City community, that are worrisome and indicates that we have had an outbreak here locally, and we're going to be taking a close look at what we should be doing in response to that, despite what the county results are. I think we're all aware of a recent outbreak we've had here in Pacific City, and I know we're all concerned about it, and we are monitoring the situation closely, and we'll ramp up these programs again in response to that. I know I share everybody's thoughts and feelings that we hope this passes quickly, and that everyone who has been infected, some friends and people we know, we wish them the best and hope for quick recovery. As I say, we recently relaxed some things because things were looking up, and then this happened, and I think we're going to have to tighten our belts and re-implement some of these precautions. I also wanted to let everybody know, just as an FYI, I was asked to speak at the Nestucca Valley Chamber of Commerce. I was invited to be the feature speaker at their last meeting about, I think it was a week ago today, and I was very pleased that and honored that they asked me to speak and introduce myself and to talk a little bit about the authority and the good work we're doing. It was a great meeting and had an opportunity to meet some good folks during the call. And I think other than that, that's probably the things that I will highlight right now. Maybe just one reminder, we are working on pulling in, so we've solicited some quotes to upgrade a couple of our lift stations. We had identified Ichi and Kiwanda as the two lift stations in most need, but we're still waiting for a quote or a bid from one supplier. And I will say that I have become aware of some issues with the Kiwanda Corridor project that may or may not impact these pump stations. So before we invest money into upgrading these stations and getting them modernized, I think we need a little bit more information in terms of what to expect or what's planned with the corridor project. There sounds like there's a chance that this development will require the need to upsize the Beachy lift station, and there's even some speculation about the folks who are doing the Kiwanda Corridor project may want to pursue relocating that pump station. So we're going to move a little cautiously here. We just don't want to invest money into stations that that may need to be upsized anyway to accommodate some of these corridor project developments. But that's really all I wanted to highlight on the manager's report. If anybody's got any questions, just let me know.
Yes, Cameron?
Yeah, John, as far as like the COVID, where are we as far as the talk of boosters? As far as, are we going in that direction? Or is this something you need to talk about in your plan that you handed out to us? We discuss
that. You're talking about booster vaccinations?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think you know, of course, this would only apply to our vaccinated staff, and it is something that we are encouraging strongly. I did not specifically mention booster shots, but I think you bring up a good point. Since we I think in the plan that I put together for board review, I think a lot of my verbiage was pertaining to encouraging vaccinations aimed at the remaining staff who are unvaccinated. I think you bring up a good point. I think we should probably put something in there that identifies the fact that we're encouraging booster shots for the staff members that have already been fully vaccinated. And I will add that to my list of things to add to the plan.
Sean, did you have a question or comment?
I did. John, what kind of a time frame are we on with the water right permits at Horn Creek? Is it something we have to do by the end of the year, or is there a specific date?
Yeah, and I was going to talk about that a little bit as part of the water master plan. I did, and maybe since you asked, I'll just briefly jump ahead. I did have a meeting with Parametrics to check the status of that, and the only thing holding up the water master plan right now is a decision or a direction on our part in terms of whether we want to pursue certifying our water rights permit. If we're going to go that direction, we don't have a lot of time. The exact date escapes me, but I'm quite certain the permit expires next year, which means we don't have a lot of time to make a decision. I'm planning to come to the board, hopefully at our next board meeting, with some recommendations and some specific plans. This is a very complex issue. You know, on the surface, certifying a water right seems like a no-brainer. The primary issue for us is that we have to demonstrate need or ability to take the water that we are hoping to certify, and it may require us expanding the Horn Creek facility to its maximum capacity to even be considered to have the Water Resources Department even consider a water certification application from us. So we have to weigh carefully the pros and the cons, the cost and the benefits. And as I say, we don't have a lot of time. If our permit expires, I mean, we have an option to just extend the permit, although that's not a gimme. Sometimes, you know, that's more difficult than somebody might expect. But we do have to make a decision. The authority has to make a decision, and I will be asking the board to make a decision based off of information that I hope to bring before the board at the next business meeting. We are on a short time frame here to either certify or to extend our permit, and there are lots of considerations and complications. There's no easy path forward, and it's something that we definitely have to talk about at length.
So I would just follow up by, you know, stressing that when these kinds of things have happened in the past that are this complex, it's taken us multiple meetings to get through this stuff as a board. So I just want to make sure we've got, you know, I know we're up against time. I want to make sure we've got time if it takes two or three or four more meetings.
Yeah, and I agree completely. In fact, I've been doing a lot of work on this very topic here in the last couple of weeks. My goal is just to come to before the board at the next business meeting with information
you know, I'll be prepared to answer questions, and I will be prepared to provide my opinion about which way we should go. And, you know, we know that we have to expedite this and we have to move fast, and I'm glad to hear you acknowledge that, because as a group, this is something that we'll need to move quickly on. And in hindsight, we probably should have been moving in this direction a year ago.
That kind of poses to my question, John. This has been supposedly been working on the two predecessors before you. How much of that stuff was done when Tony started doing it and when Kurt was doing it?
Well, I will say that I think, you know, things got derailed a little bit, just, you know, with three authority managers, you know, over the course of a year and a half. I had to immerse myself in this and get educated about it in terms of the authority situation, and it's something that I'm sure Kirk had to get acclimated to. It's something that I've had to get acclimated to. I do see evidence that you know, Tony and Kirk were moving on this, but just never quite got it over the hump. And my goal is to make this one of my absolute top priorities to push through, regardless of what our decision is, to push through just as quickly as we possibly can.
Well, I thought that we had already done that. I mean, way back when Tony was doing it, that it was going to be already done.
Well, we haven't applied to certify our water rights. You know, as I say, one of the things that I think we're going to have in place to do that is we're going to have to expand the Horn Creek facility, and and of course that hasn't been done. I haven't seen any evidence of yet, anyway, of attempts to determine how to fund that. But that issue is on my plate now. And I'm going to move ahead with earnest, and you know, I can't say for sure what transpired in the past. I've got an idea of what we need to do to move forward, and we still have a lot of things we a lot of hoops to jump through in order to achieve that.
Tom, clarify here. We currently have water rights to Horn Creek. They have to be certified. Is that correct?
Well, we have 0.7 cubic feet per second of water rights at Horn Creek that are certified. I can tell you that our water rights for all six of our wells have been certified. However, we're currently operating under a water rights permit for an additional 2.0 cubic feet per second. That is a permit. It is in permit form, and it has not been the permit has not been perfected, and those water rights have not been certified. So, in terms of Horn Creek, we've got three separate water certificates, but they only combined equal 0.7 cubic feet per minute. The most important right we have to that water is 2 cubic feet per minute, but it is still in permit form. The progression is first you're issued a water permit, and then after that, if you meet certain criteria, you can qualify to apply for a water rights certificate. The water rights certificate means that we own that water right indefinitely. A permit has an expiration, a finite period of time that the permit is good for. And the difficult thing about the permit we have right now is it's going to expire next year, and we either have to extend it or pursue certifying it, and that's the primary distinction here.
How much water are we using from Horn Creek at this time compared to those two permits or the rights we have?
Well, we and actually I had calculated that a few days ago. I can tell you that we are not currently using anywhere near the combined 2.7 cubic feet per second with the permit and our existing certificate. The issue is that we know with future development we will have to use more of it, and we will want that those water rights certified. There's also some speculation or concern that our wells may or may not be viable in the future for several different reasons. And I, you know, with the prospect of potentially losing the viability of our well water sources, plus the additional development that we are expecting in this community over the next 20, 30, 40 years, we will definitely be in need of that additional water, and we'll definitely want it available to us when we do need it.
John, are we in any danger of losing that 0.7% rights?
No, the 0.7 are certified. They are ours. There is no twilight or expiration date on those. We have perfected those. They originally started out as permits as well. We have perfected those. We have been granted water rights certificates for that portion of the water in Horn Creek, and it is ours. It's ours forever. It's the much larger portion, the 2.0 cubic feet per second on this permit that is about to expire, and we need to do something to either extend that or to certify it and ensure that water is available to us and future generations here in the community.
Would building another skid up there qualify us for the 2. Whatever?
It would. It would. That would. That is the primary question. Is expanding Horn Creek now, even though we don't necessarily need the capacity that expansion will give us now, to secure these water rights for the future.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Cameron?
John, do we have enough to sustain us? If I mean, how much more of a development can we take if we don't get it?
Well, there is a limit to that. If we were to somehow lose our permit or not be able to extend our permit or not be able to certify the permit, as long as we have a permit, and it's not uncommon to extend these permits, it's not easy. It's not a rubber stamp. There are usually terms and conditions related to these permits that you have to demonstrate you've been in compliance with. There will come a time where we will need that additional water out of Horn Creek, whether it is in a water rights certificate form or whether it is in a permit form. We will need those. We will need that water in the future.
So how much, I mean, we're looking, how much money is it to add on a skid? Are we looking at doing a bond to go after this money to bump that skid up? Or is that something that we could absorb in what monies we have in holding or whatever?
Well, I mentioned that I was working on this diligently, and this is one of my top priorities. I am currently working with Paul, the manufacturer of our membrane microfiltration system, to get an idea of what expanding the facility with another skid would cost. And I'm also looking at funding options. I don't have an expected price tag or cost on that expansion, so I'm a little reluctant to talk too much about funding options just because it's not clear to me how much the price tag is going to be. But it is possible that we may need funding assistance in the form of a bond or something along those lines in order to make this happen.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wasn't quite prepared to talk about this at length right now. I'm planning to be much more prepared to talk about this with the board at the next business meeting, and I will have additional documentation to share and to support what would be my recommendation as a path forward.
Thanks, John. Let's move on then, as you said, to unfinished business, to the wastewater, the rest of your discussion on the water wastewater master plans.
Yes, I did meet with Parametrics. There's two issues holding back the water master plan at this point. One of them is the issue of this water rights issue and whether we're planning to expand Horn Creek or not. If we are, it seems like that would be a significant item to include in a forward-looking master plan. And since we are not entirely sure about which direction to go in terms of filing to extend our existing permit or upgrading the treatment facility and pursuing a water rights certificate, it's slowed down the water master plan a bit. There is one other potential issue that has slowed the water master plan, and that's the issue of needing future storage, and more precisely, where to locate a future storage tank, and how to hydraulically connect it to our water system, our distribution system, in a way that will make it serve its purpose to the best to the best ability. I have instructed, because these are both issues that are complex, and I think is going to require some discussion, and it will take a little bit of time. I have essentially instructed Parametrics to basically just notate those items in the master plan as something that's under consideration. They are planning to notate or identify what our options are, but acknowledging the fact that we haven't, these are complex issues and we haven't made a decision yet, I've asked them to go ahead and move forward and get the water master plan completed and sent out, and just notate those two questionable items or uncertain items as I indicated. The wastewater plan, they're working on. I'm putting more pressure on them in regard to the water master plan, because that one is the most delinquent. It's the one that they started first. It's the one that we've already provided comment and review on. And I do know that they are working on the wastewater master plan as well, but my emphasis and the pressure that I put on Parametrics was mainly geared at the water plan and getting that one done and sent out. And that's probably the best update I can give you in regard to those two plans at this point. I'll continue to communicate with Parametrics about these and to ensure that they continue to work on these and get both the water and wastewater plans to us sometime very soon, with the water plant being the priority, at least as I communicated it to Parametrics.
Okay, thank you, John. I don't see any more questions at this point. Moving on to unfinished business 6B, board workshop review. This is our time to, as a board, talk about the review, the information we had from Rob Mills. And the next bullet point that he wanted us to talk about and review was the one that states, overall, the role of a board member is to make and approve district policies, set the direction of the district, make decisions, establish strategic goals and objectives, and be an advocate for special districts. He said in his meeting with us that board members seem to be clear about this stated definition of our role as policymakers rather than subject matter experts. Again, he wanted us to discuss the nuance of that issue. When some of us felt like it was a constraint not to share all of our operational knowledge and conversation with our customers. It was pointed out that the public relations person for PCJWSA is the authority manager. So I'd like your input on Rob's comments and how you're feeling about that at this time. Yes, Tom?
I still feel that if questioned by a constituent about a specific issue, that I should be able, as a board member, to discuss it. I realize that it makes me look like a fool that I can't talk to an individual constituent about something in the way of operational data, have to forward it to question to the authority manager. I'd like to think that I have enough knowledge to answer that in a legal and a practical way, to answer a question from a constituent. I don't think it's fair that as a board member I'm constrained talking to someone about a specific issue, especially such as it makes me look bad. It makes any of us look bad. So I disagree with this particular bullet point pretty much across the board.
Donna?
I think for me on this bullet point, there's maybe we all have a different line at which we are comfortable versus uncomfortable talking about things. And so, you know, for me, there's a line in discussions with constituents as to where I feel comfortable talking to them about things and where I don't. And I think it's just important for me that whenever there is something I need to talk about or am talking about that is beyond my ability to comprehend it and to explain it, that's when I would pass it on to the
up both of your comments, and Tom, I think I understand where you're coming from, feeling as though you're somehow seen as inadequate in the conversation if you can't provide the information that the constituent might be asking for. At the same time, I think that, as Sean is indicating, and I this makes perfect sense to me too, is that we all have limitations of our knowledge, and sometimes we know just enough to get in trouble, and I don't mean just as board members, but just in life in general. You can know a little bit about something and get in trouble because you don't have the big picture. So, and I guess my feeling is that when I first went into this role, I see being in an elected position as very, very different than being a hired professional staff person. And I don't see how any of us could pretend to have the background and knowledge that John has in particular and the other staff have. But John being the public spokesperson for the authority and having the extensive professional background and technical expertise that he does, I have to put my faith in that professional experience and the fact that with that experience, it really doesn't matter where the conversation goes, because he's got the experience to be able to draw on different examples and illustrate answers in many different ways. Whereas I feel as though I, as a board member, my job is to work. For example, we were just talking about the water rights and stuff. That's a very complex issue, and that's going to take a lot of time and thought on all of our part to come to an understanding of the information John provides. But my job as a board member is more to do that homework and consider the issues and the long-range planning and budgeting kinds of issues and things like that. And I want to stay as well informed as I can, obviously, on those kinds of the best decisions possible for the sake of the authority and the community. But I guess the way I see it is, I don't feel like I'm constrained in talking with members of the public because I'm generally aware of what they're asking about, but I feel like I'm providing better service to them if I connect them with John, who has the depth of professional and technical knowledge, and I feel like that's part of my role as a board member, is to help make those connections and help get people answers.
Not think that I can give all the answers myself.
Cameron, do you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, somebody asked me about it, about the property, going on property, and they were asking questions about it, and I said, well, we can't even go on the property unless we take or go with the manager or any of that. And it's like, they kind of, what do you mean? It's like, you can't go on the property or inspect it or anything, or, you know, without the manager or somebody. And I said, no, we can't. We're just policy makers. And I thought that was really kind of strange. I think it is kind of strange. I mean, we're all responsible for all this stuff, and yet we can't go see it or use it, or not use it. Kind of reminds me of a general manager that was made a general manager of a casino, and he couldn't even go on the floor in the casino. Was in the loud. And I thought, oh, that's stupid. Anyway. If going through this, the stuff that, of our packet, our roles and responsibilities, and on the, I think it was the employee packet that, that there was the letter that we wrote the board of directors, and I don't even remember drafting up the welcome to the sanitary authority. I didn't remember that the directors even wrote that up, and yet that's supposed to be part of our job. I just sometimes feel like our hands are tied. But that's just my opinion. And I do believe I wrote down our duties and responsibilities and roles. I think that needs to be updated. I think if somebody comes from to me that's an employee is having a problem, you know, I first would say, yeah, did you go to the manager, talk to them about it? They did. And then if it was brought to me, I would bring it to the whole board. I don't think there's a responsibility or a roles that says that if it's brought to the chair, that the chair has to bring it to the rest of the directors. I think we need more clarity. And I hate the word transparency because I think it's been overused and made for the scapegoat. So, anyway, I'm just rambling.
Thanks, Cameron. It sounds like that you have some concerns that we need to update the board responsibility piece. So if you kind of want to tag that somewhere in your mind, we'll get it put into the cycle of things that we need to do.
Well, comment that had kind of brought up about the update of the resolutions. And was that last board meeting, Tom? You did that? Roles and responsibility, or not the roles and resolutions and
policies of issues that we're operating on, and we don't even know what they are.
Right.
But that needs to be updated by line, and I think most of us agree with that. That
is in process. Rochelle is working on that, and when that's pulled together, then each board member will have access to that part of our website. So know that that's a project in progress at this point. But it takes some time to do that in addition to daily jobs. And there's a lot going on right now. So I think that we can trust that our staff is working hard on that and will keep us updated.
Well, it kind of goes back to the welcome to the employees. I don't remember any of us writing any of this.
Cameron, can I have you hold on that until we get to the employee handbook item?
Okey-dokey.
Thank you.
Yep.
So what you said with regard to the role of a board member is to make and approve district policies, set the direction of the board, establish goals, et cetera, and be an advocate for special districts. Am I clear in understanding that you'd like a more of an administrative role relative to more hands-on? Is that what you're feeling is not what you expected in this particular role?
Well, I thought there would be, you know, you say that we're supposed to be writing policies and procedures, but it seems like it's all written for us and we go through it and somebody else writes it and then we tweak it, and then that's policy. I thought we were supposed to be writing it instead of Rochelle or whoever who's been, or Michelle who's been doing it. I mean, you keep telling me that, you know, that's our job, roles, you know. Doesn't feel like
yes.
It.
You are correct. Our goal, our responsibility is to make and approve policies, and since both the water and sewer district were formed separately and then jointly, I believe it was 1998, that this board relies on staff to draft that because there are so many regulations involved. And then the board has the opportunity to input and edit before we pass those resolutions or not pass those resolutions. Are you wanting to be more active in writing resolutions?
I'd like to be more involved. It's more of an understanding, and then you know, instead of learning stuff on the fly.
Okay, so then maybe when an idea comes up, we can look to you to begin to draft some of those things?
Sure, I'd like to work with somebody.
I don't know what that means.
Work with the staff and to draft some of this stuff up. Because usually, isn't it the responsibility, I mean, well, it seems to be the responsibility of the manager or the executive secretary, which would be Rochelle now, but in the past it was Michelle. So
let me make sure I'm clear. Is you're not feeling like you're in on the policy making process early enough?
Right. Isn't that what our job is? Policy making?
It is, but not necessarily, at least from my understanding. It's not. I don't want to look up the regulations and try to form and write that. I don't have enough hours in the day to do that. So I love that somebody's sending me something that's edited that I can cross-check and research and get my questions answered on. That thrills me to no end. So maybe it's just a personal difference. I don't know.
Okay.
I think, personally, at least my reaction to this particular item from our consultation with Rob Mills, I think is varied. It's that, you know, I do want to hear from each and every customer that wants to have a conversation with me and ask any question about what's going on. I find that I cannot answer those questions in depth, and I'm happy to refer them to the authority manager. And sometime I want, like Cameron, you were mentioning being in on it, I want to be in on those conversations so that I can learn more. And oftentimes in the past, I have met customers down at the office or got them on a phone call with the authority manager because I want to understand more about what that customer is thinking, and I want the authority manager to ask questions and give responses that I might not have thought about. I feel very strongly that it isn't the board's position, personally, that it isn't the board or the chair's position to represent the authority out there as the person that is has the complete knowledge of any particular thing. Because there's such a language and personality difference between people, even in a small community, that it's open to misinterpretation. And I found that out very clearly when we started the Horn Creek process, and we were trying to figure out how to communicate the value of the GO bond to different members of the community. And that was a really tough time to be able to communicate that clear, and it was very frustrating, and it was much easier when the experts were around to explain it, and for, at that point, Tony to represent PCJ in his role. So I don't see item as constraining me in any way of talking to people, but I want to connect people with the authority manager and the staff because they truly are the experts. I don't think I felt that with other boards. One is because most of those boards didn't have an executive director, and two, most of those boards I sat on were not as highly regulated as water and sewer is. And I feel a responsibility to make sure that the person that is clearest and has the most knowledge about it be the one to communicate. So going back to my role as facilitator in this discussion, it sounds like we all have a variety of opinions, and listening to each other, maybe we can learn a little bit more about how these things affect each other, and we can all try to take that into consideration and do a better job as board members. And that's what this is all about in terms of discussing it. So thank you for your input, and continue to try to be a better board and work together. Any final comments from anybody? Okay, I will move on then. John, we're back to you with regards to the revised employee handbook.
Yes, well, after listening to that discussion, I'm a little leery about embarking on this one, and some of the things that I want to say. Well, first of all, as you know, we solicited comments from the board members regarding the employee handbook, and we received some valuable input in that process. The document included in the board packet for this meeting is our attempt to provide a conformed version of the employee handbook. However, it should be noted that we did not incorporate every suggestion we received. If a board member feels strongly about a particular item that was not included or addressed, I would like them to contact me directly to discuss it, and I can give my thoughts and reasoning about it at the time. This may or may not tie into a broader discussion about policy. Is this handbook policy? Who should write it? Who should decide what's in it? We had worked closely with our HR counsel on the content of it. We tried to be as inclusive as we could about member comments. As I said, we did not include everything. I do want to say that this is our first attempt to provide a conformed version. It does not have to be our last, but and if there are people or things that were omitted or weren't included that any of the board members feel strongly about, I would like to, I'd like them to contact me directly, and we can talk about those issues and see if we can come to an understanding or a compromise or anything like that. I will say that, I know there's some sensitivity here. I can hear a little bit about a little bit of it in the discussions about the last topic. But there is one topic that I would really like to address, it's has some bearing on the employee handbook. I've received some feedback some board members, at least one, perhaps more, would like to see a direct and unrestricted conduit between the board and the authority staff. I believe the stated purpose for this would be to give employees another avenue for reporting and resolving potential conflicts or grievances or whatever they might have. I feel compelled to give my opinions about this, and to be honest with you, I think there are some other things that we can do if the goal is to provide employees with more than just one avenue to express their thoughts, feelings, concerns, issues, to be honest with you, and I'll just tell the board how I feel. I'm a little uncomfortable with providing employees with an open invitation to contact board members directly with issues, and I mean that regardless of what position that board member may currently hold. I feel as though that this could potentially undermine my authority to some degree. I feel as though it could provide a window for employees to bypass management altogether in a process like this. I have some proposals of some things that we can do that I think if there are legitimate concerns about providing, additional methods and opportunities for employees to address a grievance or to bring up an issue or to report some kind of a conflict or something else. In my personal opinion, I believe that employees should, as the authority manager, employees should come to me first. I believe they should go to our HR counsel as a second option. And I believe that, you know, they should go directly to a board member as a third and last result. And it's not because I don't think the board has some role in this or could provide some valuable input. I just think it's a bit of a slippery slope. And I think that, you know, with creating a bigger or more prominent role for our HR counsel, if an employee didn't want to come to me with an issue, they could go to our HR counsel, and then that person can decide whether the issue was serious enough to escalate to the board of directors. I will say there are some issues. I don't see them ever happening, but, you know, any issue that is or any type of thing that is prohibited by law, like discrimination or harassment or unethical behavior, or perhaps an employee wants to blow the whistle on something that they perceive as being wrong or illegal or unethical in the workplace. Well, to be honest with you, I think every board member should be made aware of that immediately. But I just wanted to give my thoughts about that, and I know that it's, you know, probably might be met with differing opinions. But one thing I would suggest, in addition to a more prominent role by our HR counsel, making that person readily available to staff continually, asking that person to document any employee contacts if an employee reaches out to HR, and to elevate that to the board if our HR representative feels as though it's a serious issue. I would also propose that we develop an employee survey, call it an employee job satisfaction survey. There can be questions in there regarding, their critique of current management at the authority. There can be questions in there as to whether the employees would like additional resources, no matter what they might be. And we can even tie it into, something having to do with an annual performance appraisal for somebody like me as the authority manager. I think there are a number of things we can do here to alleviate some of the board members' concerns. I'm just not a big fan of an open invitation for the employees to reach out to board members at any time. I feel as though there needs to be a process. I feel as though there needs to be a protocol, and I really feel as though I should have first crack at resolving any issues that staff might have. And if I'm unable to do so to the employee's satisfaction, or for some reason they're uncomfortable coming to me, then they go to our HR representative, and she can escalate any significant issues from there. So, you know, that was one issue on that I know we've gotten some feedback and some opinions about in regards to the employee handbook. You know, I just wanted to address that and, you know, see if we can move forward and find some good solutions for the employees, good resources that doesn't make going to the board one of their primary responses or to issues that they may be having in the workplace. So anyway, I'll yield the floor. Having said that, I just wanted to bring that up because it was something mentioned as something to go into some detail about on the employee handbook. We have not done that. I would like to massage those parts of the employee handbook a little bit more, but I just felt like I that was something I needed to say. So I will yield the floor back.
Thank you, John. Tom, you have a comment?
Thank you. John, I appreciate your comments. I especially like your thoughts on the employees going, if they're uncomfortable with talking to you or a supervisor or lead person, to contact the HR person. I think that particular protocol is has merit. However, the last time we really needed HR consultation, they weren't available. And I've made a suggestion that possibly we have not necessarily an HR full-time staff or department, but have someone on staff who has a generalist, HR generalist certificate that could assist us. Timeliness is what we found was the big problem. Now, by and large, the entire handbook that was presented to us as a draft is, I think, quite good. It was the layout was a little different than the other one, but it seems quite pertinent. However, there are a couple of possibly what would be considered a major discussion. I'm not going to get into it now, but what you brought up and your feelings about a direct conduit to the board, I tend to agree with you, but it has to exist as possibly a last resort, perhaps sooner. A good, you kind of hinted at something like a whistleblower or sexual harassment kind of thing where, for example, being there are men and women in positions of authority here, a person may not want to talk to someone of an opposite sex, for example, about a sexual harassment issue. And the opportunity to go to a board member might be a viable option. But other than that, I think your comments and a couple of things I have in mind, I don't know about the others, but I think constitutes the need for a workshop where we can kind of hash these out, and I think it almost comes down to policy. That this is one of those things that two of those things that need to be, we need to have a clear policy, and a workshop's probably the only thing that would do it. And right off the bat, I can see maybe at least two items in the and one of those items is your concern, John, that need to be discussed. in a workshop. And those are my comments.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Cameron?
Yeah, I'd like to see a progressive steps of discipline, of what steps that are going to be taken, of anything of discipline. I'd like to see a part about investigations, what the steps of the investigation is for an employee, and also to go through the steps of, say, of talking to somebody, that we have like through the military, how the progression of anarchy of who to go to, and that you need to follow that procedure. I'd like to see that in the employee handbook. The employee handbook is for the employees to go to get information, you know, work that they go to, and I think there needs to be more information in there.
Thanks, Cameron. Cameron, I had one other question of you that you brought up earlier. And that had to do with the welcome that was at the in front of the employee handbook. Since I've been on the board, I think this is our third or fourth version of the employee handbook. And at each point in time, there's been a welcome from the board that's been written by the staff that's been working on it. So you were concerned that the board wasn't consulted. Is there a particular phrase or missing subject matter in there that concerns you?
Well, it would be almost like a mission statement as the board as a board of what we expect of the employee. In the policy, there was talking about, you know, how to treat employees. I'd like to see it as anybody that has to do with even the board, you know, respect for the board members, because there's nothing in there to the employees that, you know, you have to be respectful. I think you have to be respectful to everyone. I'd like to see, like Tom said, to do a workshop and to go through this stuff, and maybe at the workshop to go through as far as a board as a whole, how we feel as an employee coming in and to welcome them in. So if we do a workshop, I'd like to see those things in there.
So, Cameron, if I'm to understand you correctly, that even though respect and so forth is mentioned in other places or implied in other places in the handbook, you're wanting that mentioned in the letter from the board?
Excuse me, I missed that last half, Carolyn.
Okay. You had mentioned earlier about the letter from the board in the beginning of the handbook that you feel that the board should have written that, and that there's some missing pieces. So if I'm to understand you correctly, even though respect is discussed throughout the employee handbook directly and indirectly, you feel that it needs to be in that letter also?
Yes.
Okay. Then John's got that comment. As you've all noticed, the harassment and whistleblower is mentioned in the handbook. We also have resolutions as required by law. That policy is set regarding that, and those are different documents than the employee handbook. The employee handbook, from what I recall, has been a staff project implemented by our authority manager, whereas the board has been sets policy through resolutions. And resolutions that have to do with matters that are required by the state or the feds that have to do with employees. And I think we are up to date on that, or at least we were the last time we had our HR person looking at those issues. John, did you have an additional comment that I missed?
Yeah.
Please go ahead.
just a couple of things. One, John, I am in general agreement with your progression of how an employee should tackle any kind of conflicts, meaning, you know, going to you first and a HR second and a board member third. I think it's good to have that as an official policy. Second, I'd just like to say in general, I think you've done a really good job on this handbook, and everybody who's contributed to this on the staff has done a really good job. And, you know, on this kind of thing, I view my role as an advisory role, and I feel like I have given you my opinions on this manual, and from that, you know, at this point, I just think, in my opinion, it's up to you to either incorporate them or not incorporate them and move forward. I don't really think it's my role to nickel and dime this thing. I've given you my opinions based on my career and my personal opinions, and I think it's really in your court to make these decisions. So that's where I'm coming from on it.
And I had very similar thoughts to Sean's, and I think we need to all remember that in the job description of the authority manager, I'm not going to quote it exactly, but personnel issues are deemed to, supervised, conducted, whatever the language is, by the authority manager. That is part of that position's responsibility. It is not a daily supervision, or supervision of behavior of employees is not a board level concern unless things are really out of hand, but unless it rises to that. And I really want to applaud John and Rochelle and whoever else was involved in putting this together, working from previous materials. I think what we have here is a very, very thorough, well-organized, comprehensive document that it also has taken advantage of the HR consultant person that I am going back to remembering Tom's questions about having somebody on staff that does that. And I think the solution that we came to, having a consultant that provides those same services to us, who is not in line responsible to the authority manager, I think that's key. That if you're going to have someone, I don't think it would make sense to have somebody in-house that reports to the authority manager who can receive complaints from other employees. That I think would undermine the authority manager's position. So I think the solution that was arrived at when Tom started that conversation a few months ago, to have the HR consultant, was an excellent solution. And apparently she has the faith of the staff now. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that she was involved in this draft. And then the other HR advising we get from outside is the HR counsel, which I think of as legal advice. And I believe that person was involved in the draft of this document as well. So between our in-house experience and those two professional consultants, I think this document is very complete. I do think it covers the question of if someone has difficulty taking a problem to the authority manager because it may involve that person. I think somewhere in this document, and I don't know where exactly, but, and maybe more than one place, it clearly says to the authority manager or the HR consultant. And so I think there is an avenue there to address the concerns that have been expressed earlier in the conversation. And personally, I'm happy with the document the way it stands. I've communicated questions and concerns to John, and he's either incorporated them or not, and that's fine with me. And so I'd encourage anybody that's got any outstanding questions or concerns like that to take John up on his offer to sit down and talk about those individually and let's get them sorted out. But I do think, maybe going back to our earlier conversation, we do need to keep in mind the role of the board of directors. And it is not staff supervision, and it's not staff conflict resolution. So it's broad policy and that sort of thing. And yes, we do pass resolutions. We don't. This, to me, is a staff supervision document that is completely the purview of the authority manager. So that's my two cents.
Thanks, Dan. So I think we've all given John input, and he has invited us, if we have further questions, to give him a call and chat with him, and we'll move on from there. Item 6D, Water Management and Conservation Plan. John?
Yeah, not a lot to update the board about this at this time. This is another thing we've got to get done with a deadline, and we have secured Parametric Services on this document. They wrote our last one, and they're very familiar with our water system, and I know that they're working on this plan in addition to others, but they are confident that we'll have this plan done by our deadline of April of next year. And really the only update since our last business meeting is the contract has been signed for them to perform these services for us in developing this document. So there'll be updates to come, but that's about all to report about it for this month.
Thank you, John. I don't see any questions, so let's go on to item 7A, new business, the COVID-19 continuity of operations plan. John, back to you.
Yes, as we discussed, over the course of the last couple of months, I felt as though we had a need for a comprehensive continuity of operations plan that outlined and identified all of our COVID-19 safety precautions that are designed to protect our staff, and this is a draft. Again, I would appreciate review and comment by the board. I think this plan on the surface meets my goal of being a comprehensive a plan. Not just in terms of PPE and mask wearing and so forth, but also outlines specific procedures and processes based off of a variety of scenarios, employee exposure, employee illness. I also gets into some of the more mundane parts of living in a pandemic world, things like supply chain issues, critical parts, supplies, services, considerations regarding ensuring an uninterrupted supply of those, reduction or at least a adjustment to contractor services, how contractors on site may impact employees, and how to handle that, and with a discussion toward you know, critical contractor activities and non-critical activities and how things can be postponed or done in different ways that prevent direct employee contact with contractors, customers, visitors, people from outside the workplace. As I said, that's what I felt like we needed. I know that many utilities have these plans in place because of the critical nature of the services we provide, and knowing that we can only continue to provide those services if our essential employees are healthy and able to report to work every day. And that's basically the heart of the continuity plan. And I would just ask everybody to review it. Please provide comment. I've already received comment from one board member. Very, very good comments. Cameron had mentioned about encouraging booster shots for vaccinated staff, which I think would be a good thing to add. So please look this over and give me your thoughts and comments, and I'll take that and put together a final draft, and hopefully the board sees the benefit of having something like this that consolidates all our COVID-19 prevention efforts into one core document.
John, I'd like to compliment you on this this document, especially toward the continuity of ops. You did emphasize cross-training of all personnel into so everybody can do everybody's job is your basic goal, I can see. And you also put a chart in here for process area. You have major process areas and who the primary operator and backup operator is. And I think that's also pretty good. But I'm wondering if that kind of thing should also be incorporated into an emergency operations policy or emergency operations procedure. One thing I was thinking of, I'm not sure if that's, besides what you've outlined here, I think it's pretty comprehensive, I agree with you, and it could be easily incorporated into other areas, whether it's a pandemic or a natural catastrophe in the area. And that's why I was leaning more toward the emergency ops policy or procedure. And somewhere I'd like to see in those seven major process areas what it takes to, or how many hours or minimum amount of staff to manage or take care of those seven major process areas. How many hours a week, how many staff, what are the most critical positions, or I would think it'd be water treatment and wastewater treatment, but every emergency or every pandemic situation would be different. But we can talk more about that, but I'm thinking that identifying those key positions, how many people it would take to maintain operations, or how many hours a week that would take to maintain operations at a very minimum, unless there was a major catastrophe that seriously damaged our equipment.
Yeah, I think that's great feedback, Tom, and I think that's a great idea. We do have a emergency response plan that does get in to some of the other potential emergency scenarios. Perhaps, you know, we should add this pandemic or COVID-19 response plan as an element of our even more broader facility or utility emergency response plan. But that's great feedback. Thank you.
I think that's a good idea.
Any other questions or comments? All right, thank you. Moving on to item 8. Rochelle or John, did you receive any guest questions or comments this month?
I did not.
No.
All right, thank you. Item 9, director comments. John.
I would just like to take a minute to get back to Leonard and his certifications. I know how hard he worked on that, and so I just want to say thank you. But more important than that, I think, you know, as somebody who's managed people for a long time, a company's needs may not always line up with what an employee's desires are. And I think the fact that Leonard did this and jumped two levels on this really not only is a great asset to the authority, but shows and reflects his commitment to the authority. And I just want to say thank you, because I know how hard that is, and I know how great an accomplishment that is. And if anyone's up for a virtual bourbon or whiskey toast, count me in.
I agree. Hear, hear. Bravo. Thanks, Sean. Cameron?
It kind of brings up the point of the employees. Are they, John, are they willing to do as far as moving up? I know that you had made a comment about our utility having too many utility workers. Are those utilities jumping up to take some classes to move their skills up?
You're referring to our operator and training positions?
Right.
Yeah, well, you know, this is why I think Leonard's efforts are so important. Not only does it demonstrate to some of our younger staff who haven't really attempted obtaining certifications, at least not to the extent that I'd like to see them. But Leonard demonstrating that, you know, even somebody with his tenure and somebody with his knowledge and experience can still benefit by expanding your knowledge and expanding your certifications and demonstrating to the some of the other staff that may be somewhat intimidated by this process that it is possible to do. It's possible to better yourselves. And, you know, the reality of it is that we can, you know, we can reward them through merit processes, you know, and so forth, in terms of wages and so forth. And so, we haven't come as far with that as I would hope. We're definitely encouraging the additional staff to take advantage expanding themselves, expanding their value to the utility, and taking those extra steps and putting in the work to achieve these certification levels. And Leonard is, like I say, he's just been a very good role model for the rest of the staff in that respect. And I'm expecting to see some in some of these areas and with some of our other staff who haven't tried to take a bite of that apple yet.
Well, weren't they hired with the utilities? Weren't they hired on the permit on the that they would move up within a year of their employment?
Well, I don't think they were. We have some employees. I know the ones in higher level positions that do have perhaps some expectation for that. I don't know for sure about these operator and training positions. I think the overall intent is they don't stay operators in training forever. And let's make it clear. A couple of our guys that still aren't certified are some of the most knowledgeable and valuable employees we have. And so they've definitely grown, they've definitely learned, they've definitely developed. They just haven't progressed in terms of actual certifications. A couple of these guys are operator and training name only. A couple of them are well beyond the operator and training standpoint. They just don't have the actual certification to show it.
Well, when Michelle was the manager, she had said that in one of the board meetings that, yeah, this person was to move up and that they had, and she was going to light a fire under them to get them going. So I'd really like to see, you know, more of the progression of these people moving up. You know, if they're unwilling to do it, light a fire.
Yeah, I definitely encourage them and attempt to motivate them to do that. Perhaps we can find some ways to help that motivation. I'm not aware, and I haven't checked, but I'm not aware of any type of certification timeline in anybody's offer letters or anything like that. I know that's generally the intent, but we'll continue to encourage and to help support folks to get there.
I mean, Rochelle is a perfect example of, you know, she came in at the bottom and everything, and look where she's at now. She did a great job, and she's continuing to learn. There was another question I had was on the PC monthly water report. I don't know if you, I was really kind of concerned about the unaccounted unbilled water percentage for this month. How much it's flying up there?
Yeah, I'm concerned about it too. It's 27%. I think that's an outlier. In fact, we're checking some of our math. Interestingly enough, the month before was only 3%.
Yeah, I know. That's what caught my eye. It's like,
usually when you see a difference like that over the course of 2 months, a lot of times it's because perhaps we didn't meet the reader correctly after month one, and when we read it after month two, we caught and corrected for that error with that second meter reading. And we're still investigating as to maybe that's what happened. But I have noticed that too, and I'm concerned about it, and we are investigating.
Well, that's not a bug with our system, with our new reading, our meter program, then.
No, I don't think it's that. I don't think that explains it at all. One reason I don't believe that it explains it, you know, I can understand a couple of water meters that maybe aren't working as accurately as they should, but this goes beyond that. I think it's an outlier. I'm skeptical it's real, but we are investigating and trying to determine the cause.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Yes, Tom?
Moving back to Leonard's accomplishment as a lead person or supervisor, which is really what he is and what he's been doing for some time, I think this is a a great example of leading by example. And one thing I think might not be a bad idea to help encourage our other, the simple thing, to help encourage our other folks to follow his example, is to have a congratulatory letter written by you and signed by the board, each board member, and presented, two-lettered, and on nice paper so that it could be framed, that sort of thing. And as each employee from now on achieves a certain level like this or passes their test to move on, I think the board should recognize those individuals other than at a board meeting by a congratulatory letter like this.
I think that's a great idea. And by the way, I would be remiss if I didn't also point out that Rochelle was recently recognized by the Special Utilities of the SDAO for graduating from their, what was it, Rochelle, their SDAO Academy?
Yeah,
which required a lot of work.
Good
and
training
a lot
academy.
Of, a lot of individual time and a lot of effort as well. So kudos to her as well. Yay!
Tom, I like your comment and your idea. Speaking of board signatures, have we gotten, Rochelle, have all the board members? Yes. Okay, thank you. Congratulations. I think it only took us 3 months.
Yep.
We'll do better, we promise. Any other final comments? No. All right. Then it is 6:49, and I will adjourn our meeting. Thank you all, and have a good evening. And again, Leonard, congratulations.